Good afternoon. We're going to open the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources for March 2nd, 2017. And we have a work session that's scheduled right now. And we have people, let me do this here first, Department of Geology and Mineral Industries report on improvements to business practices. Can you, do we need to have someone come up, or do I need to have someone, all of these folks here for that time?
We can have these people come up. They'll be able to provide more information, but I'll give you a little background first.
Okay. I know that you have a testimony that you need to give as well.
Shouldn't take long, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So why don't we do this? Can we delay the work session for right now? And are you going to be back?
I'm going to be back in a jiffy.
Okay. Good deal. And Representative Witt should be coming in right now. How about that? That was timed well. There we go. Thank you very much. Why don't you head on over there?
I'll be right back. Discussion I couldn't get out of.
I understand how that is.
I have no idea how long.
So we will start the work session. If you would explain that, and then we can get going, because I have something I have to testify on as well.
Co-Chair Frederick, members of the subcommittee, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries is here for two items today. Of course, the first one is the report, and the second one is their budget bill. The report is a follow-up from Senate Bill 5512, their 2015 budget bill. It included a budget note instructing them to report on progress in implementing appropriate measures to improve business practices. They first reported on this in February 2016 on their initial progress, and we asked them to come back with a follow-up, initially scheduled for December e-board, but we wanted to wait and let the Natural Resources Subcommittee hear that as it specifically pertains to their budget bill, which you'll hear next. So the agency is here to provide a brief presentation on their progress so far, and then we can do the LFO recommendations for the work session after that.
That would be great. And Representative Power, you have testimony that you're supposed to give somewhere?
I have to leave at about 1:45.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well, we have some time. Well, I have something I'm supposed to be presenting as well.
My goodness.
On the other side of the building. This is the time of the session when everyone's trying to get their bills passed, and we're trying to be in four different places at the same time. So why don't we go ahead and have Brad Avey, Ian Madden, Kim Rendell, and Connor Anderson please come forward. This is a work session. Do I need to open the work session?
I believe you did.
I did already. Okay. I said it. I don't think I officially opened the work session for this Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. Yes, what did you need, sir?
I was just going to say public hearing and work session.
We could do public hearing. I can do that both at the same time. We'll open the public hearing as well on House Bill 5011. So it's a public hearing and a work session. Please introduce yourself.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Brad Avey, Director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. With me is Deputy Director Ian Madden and Chief Financial Officer Kim Rendell. The first portion here, we're providing a second update to the business practices improvement that the agency has been undertaking over the last year. I'll run through quickly this first page. And then Ian will touch in more detail on the mineral lands regulation and reclamation program, and then I'll come back to the balance of the agency. The first priority bar, the detailed accounting architecture, was the most important thing for the agency to address first, because it affected all of our finances. And last year we were nearly complete with that. And as of today, we're at 100% and have worked a great deal with DAS and their team that came in about a year and a half ago, and we have followed up on recommendations there, and our CFO has done a terrific job getting the structure in place. You'll note the second bar, it has a faint 80 and a 60, and what we should have there as well is a 40, because I think that's where we really were a year ago. At the time, we didn't have the knowledge to know how much we didn't know. And so we're in interest to be transparent and more accurate. We moved the progress backward to 60 because a year ago we were much closer to 40. We're continuing to find things, and so we're continuing to make progress, but it's not what it appeared last year. Similarly, for the bond, we're at the 99 nearly complete. There's a little bit of work left to do there. We are making progress on the written policy and procedure development. Most of that progress has to do with written financial procedures. Those are, again, essential as tied to the accounting architecture. We still have some work to do on some of the general administrative procedures, getting those updated. There are some drafts in writing, but we need to get the balance of those completed. And then the second geologic survey and services bar, which speaks to the business model assessment. The budget note asked us to take a deep look at our funding sources and how we could make better inroads in them being sustainable. We're reliant for about a third of our budget on grants, and that's worked out well to date, but it's pretty unpredictable whether those will continue any particular year. We added a final bar there, IT remediation plan implementation. It wasn't part of the original request to report out, but in the last year, an IT assessment report was generated by the Office of the Chief Information Officer, and subsequent to that, we developed an IT plan to implement their recommendations, went to the emergency board, and got funding to start that process. And in terms of the implementation progress on the overall plan, we're at about 65%. With that, I'll have Ian touch on the MLR bars. Well, excuse me, let me touch on the first one again. It was the accounting architecture that I mentioned as the first one, really getting the grant and project structure in place. Again, worked well at length with DAS Financial Services and continue to do so, as well as with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and really have made a good effort at getting all of our coding, cost structure, monitoring, reporting in place, and in good shape. So with that, I'll have Ian address the Mine Mineral Lands Reclamation Program.
For the record, my name is Ian Maiden. I'm the Deputy Director and Chief Scientist for Dogami. Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. The one of the first things that we should talk about in terms of the MLRR program is that as part of a larger agency restructuring and reorganization of management, we have now brought the management of that program under the single deputy director position that I hold that also supervises the science portion of the geologic survey and services. Part of the reason for this would be to make for better integration between the two sides of the agency, to have one person in charge of both, and also to provide some stability to a program that has not had stable management for a bit. I have been with the agency for 30 years now on the science side, and I have been involved in the management team for 20 years, so I'm well-versed in the issues down at MLRR, and for the last 6 months have been kind of in it up to my eyeballs, trying to get up to speed on the details of the program and understand where we're at. So just briefly, I was going to talk a little bit about the straightforward elements of the action items here that we've dealt with, establishing more detailed accounting codes to track revenue. That's been completed and in place for years, so we have a very good handle on where our finances are coming from. We've also done a thorough job of looking at indirect costs and getting a proper indirect cost structure in place for this part of the agency that aligns with our federal negotiated indirect cost structure, so that we're now doing everything according to the book on that particular aspect. And then as far as the issue of assessing the current functions and looking at how the fee structure relates to our costs, That's what's turned out to be a much more complicated issue than we originally thought. This is not an issue of tweaking the fees. We need to take a really, really deep dive into the whole program, understand what it is we're trying to do, what we have, what resources we have at hand, and try to design a more efficient program to move ahead. So talk a little bit about some of the elements of that. One of the issues that we really need to deal with is to have good data. If we're going to go come back to you and ask for a change in our fees, we need to know not only where our revenue is coming from, but we really need to know what our expenditures are, and we need to know what is the universe of tasks that we have to carry out. And so we're currently in the process of doing a comprehensive review of the program right now, where we're looking to answer those questions, to collect the necessary data. So we've already got good revenue data. We've instituted this year very detailed expenditure data so that we can actually tell you, for example, what the average cost to process a permit is. Can't tell you that now. We're going to collect the data that will allow us to do that. And then we're also going through and making a list of all of the tasks that everybody in the agency or in the program does, so that we can sit down and look at how to better organize the staffing to make for a workflow that makes sense, and to also prioritize those tasks. Because although our finances have stabilized with the fee increases that happened in 2015, they've stabilized at 70% of capacity. And so what we're probably going to have to do when we look at this universe of tasks is decide that there are some things that we don't have to do and stop doing them to try to get back in balance. So there's really, we really are looking at this sort of entire picture of obligations and revenue and expenditures and staffing to try to make a system that is more efficient, has better workflow, has better customer service, better consistency, and all around a more effective agency. And then the last thing I was going to comment on was on the MLRR bond reconciliation. We had an issue in 2015 that some of you may recall where our cash security funds were not in separate accounts from our operating funds. And our 2015 budget bill required them to be separated and tasked us with going through and making sure that all of those cash securities were appropriately accounted for. So we're almost entirely through that process. We're down to a handful of these cash securities that we have not had the capacity yet to reconcile. The records are old. Some of these go back to the 1980s, and we simply haven't had the time to dig back through the accounting system, find the data, and make a final reconciliation on those.
So back to the GS&S side, one of the things that was really lacking in the recent past was a standardized project management approach, where the project managers knew where their budget was when they were approaching the end of their project. And so what would happen is they may go over budget, or they might miss a deadline to apply for the new grant. There's a process in place now where any new project comes through the leadership team. It gets approved or not, depending on the fit with the agency mission, but also whether there are match requirements. And the project, our project managers meet monthly with the CFO and talk about where the project's at. And the project managers are also receiving training in how to effectively manage projects. We also introduced a project management software to help with that process. And we have made progress over the past year, but we still have additional work to do. It looks like I skipped a slide, so if I could go back to the written policy procedure development. I had mentioned that briefly when we started. And again, the financial procedures that the CFO has put together are critical and essential for our federal grants. They won't want to see those financial procedures in writing. And what remains are the more administrative operating procedures. We can go to the next one. The one that is a little more challenging is taking that deeper look at the entire agency, and specifically for the budget note, the GS&S program, and looking at the balance of funding, the grant funding, and how to ensure its stability. But with that is the larger question of providing leadership throughout the agency, so that we don't that the agency doesn't get into a situation it was in several years back. Part of that as well has to do with refining our key performance measures, and Ian will speak to that in a moment. As I mentioned, we do have an IT implementation process in place following writing up the plan this spring. One of the challenges has been having all the server capacity in one building with inadequate HVAC system. We're moving that down to another room in a floor below. In the process of that, we've hired the IT administrator and IT staff previous to the assessment of the IT condition of the agency. The agency relied on a single contractor over a 20-year period and got by with as little resources as possible, and that left some pretty significant deficiencies. So where we're at is about 65% of the way there. We still have some server work. Part of that work will be moving some of the data down to Salem and keeping some of it in the building we're in Portland. And the just a quick look at the staffing by service area. This slide shows the range of work that the agency is involved in. In the orange, you'll see that's basically the Mineral Lands Regulation and Reclamation Program, the regulatory portion of the agency, and then staff are distributed throughout landslide, earthquake, flood, tsunami, and geologic mineral resource mapping. And overlaid all of that is the LIDAR mapping portion of the agency. As you can see, there's 43 total positions, not counting temporary positions. And then just a quick snapshot of agency funding and proportional indication with the Mined Land Regulation and Reclamation Program at 16% of the budget, and the balance of the agency at 84%. 11 positions in the Mineral Lands Program, and the balance in GS&S. So with that, we're working hard to strengthen Dogami's operational foundation. It is taking some time because basically building it from ground up in the financial area. So with that, be happy to take any questions.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. But you had a slide earlier saying that it said something like 70% of the positions have been filled. Is a slide earlier?
Senator Taylor, what that meant is that we currently only have 70% of the total positions in the MLRR program occupied. So we're down 30% of our staff.
Right. And so I just wonder if you could just kind of let us know, what is that impact having? What are the positions? Are they not filled? For what reasons? What that's all about?
So the reason that the positions are not filled is that we don't have the money to pay those people.
Well, that's a good reason.
Yeah. Okay. And again, sort of coming into the 2015 budget, we had a serious financial crisis in that program. We got a fee increase that was done quickly. I guess, rather than thoroughly is the most polite way to say it. And that fee increase only kicked in January 2016. It's taken all of 2016 to start to actually get ahead. Mm-hmm. And so we're now at the point where we have 3 months worth of operating expenses in the bank. So that's a good thing. And we are getting ahead at the rate of $6,000 or $7,000 a month, mm-hmm, with three positions unfilled. And so the plan is, after we've gotten through with this comprehensive review and we know what kind of positions we actually need, as the finances catch up, we will start to fill those positions. But until we've really got a clear sense on where we need to be, we don't want to be filling positions without a real good picture going forward. The way that we're accommodating that shortage at this point is we've essentially stopped doing field visits, except for the purposes of handling complaints or for inspections that are required to do a new permit or the transfer of a permit or the amendment of a permit. So mm-hmm, the routine inspection of sites to make sure that things are going well is that's a big chunk of time, and that's been cut off. We can get by with that for a while, but in the long run, that'll come back to bite us.
Hmm. Okay.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How long have the positions been vacant?
Chair Witt, Representative Escobel.
I think you just answered my question.
Understand that I've been supervising this group for less than 6 months. And so... I would have to turn to our CFO.
Thank you.
Okay. So most of these have been vacant since early to mid 2016.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. You've you're in the process of being audited by both the Secretary of State and FEMA. I was just kind of curious as to how, are you learning anything from those audits, or can you kind of fill us in on those?
In fact, both the Secretary of State and the FEMA audit are complete. They were completed in October. We asked for those audits so that we could make sure we weren't missing anything. And the items identified, the recommendations in the Secretary of State audit, at the time of the audit, we had either completed them or were in the process of addressing those particular ones. And the narrative write-up of the budget note report addresses where we're at in each of those recommendations. The FEMA audit did not have any findings for the grants it looked at. So they were helpful in confirming we were on the right track with those particular challenges. Kim, did you have any other thoughts about those audits? Kim did the bulk of the work, working back and forth with the Secretary of State. And
for the record, my name is Kimberly Riedel, the Chief Financial Officer for the DAGAMI. They were very helpful in just reassuring us that we were doing the right thing, and that completely breaking down the accounting system and then rebuilding it was what needed to be done, and that we were on track and how we were doing our indirect rates, that the revenues were now coming in the way that they should be according to expenditures. They were just very supportive in, you know, you could kind of try and do this and see if that works, or work on these things, but there wasn't anything where it was, oh no, don't do that. Getting that confirmation that we were doing good, we were doing what we were supposed to, and yeah, it was a mess, and it looks way better, was very helpful and very insightful, and I look, quite frankly, forward to them coming again and doing it again.
Yeah, I have a brief follow-up, and this is a follow-up a little bit about what Senator Taylor was asking. What did we lose by not having the 30 positions? you know, maybe that's where we should be, I think, is the question. And I think the Senator, Representative Escobar hit on that too. So what actually did we lose by losing those 30 positions? Yeah. Or 30%, rather.
Co-chairs Frederick and Witt, and Senator Girard, the it's three positions that were down,
okay.
Not 30%. And again, the immediate loss is the field presence that has been sort of a hallmark of this program over the years. What we really are hoping to do when we do this comprehensive review and redesign of the program is to be able to reinstate the right amount of field presence, as opposed to, so for instance, several biennia ago, the KPM for this particular program was how many sites were visited during the course of a year. And that ended up sort of driving everything that people did was, are we getting out and checking off the box on visiting all these sites? Some of these sites hadn't been mined for years. So we want to try to get back to the point where we're using our field resources really effectively, and when we go out to do an inspection, there's a reason that we go out to do it. I can't tell you at this point whether the 11 positions that we currently have are enough to do what we need to do. When we've been through that that review, we'll be in a much better position to answer that question.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the same vein, can you tell us what you may be hearing from some of your constituent groups as to what they need or would like to have from you, and maybe feel that given current staffing levels, et cetera, that they you're just unable to perform at that level?
Co-chairs Frederick and Witt, members of the committee, I haven't had much feedback on this issue from the regulated community. Again, only been a couple months that I've been the point person. I'm a little surprised that I haven't had any feedback. I don't think that they have seen over the course of the last year a terribly significant change in the level of service that they've been receiving. That said, I believe we can do much better.
Right. Follow up.
Thank you. Yes.
And in what areas?
The most important ones, besides internal efficiencies, that we're spending less money and getting things done more effectively, timeliness, okay, of permitting, and follow through,
mm-hmm,
and consistency, and then, you know, one of our other big tasks is record keeping. We're still all paper, and so we need to address all four of those things.
Your candor is very much appreciated. Thank you.
Any more questions? No? Go ahead. Are we done with this particular aspect? I'm sorry, I got here late.
Public testimony.
Public testimony now? We're going to go into public?
Not on the work session report. So next week, go to the desk.
What do we need to know? Oh, we can go to DAS.
Should we do a recommendation on the report session?
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'll do an eye.
All right. Kathy Conley, if you would move forward there and grab a microphone for us. Thank you.
Co-chair Frederick, co-chair Witt, members of the committee, Kathy Conley, DAS Chief Financial Office, and we recommend that you acknowledge receipt of the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I need to have
The legislative fiscal office recommends acknowledging receipt of the report with the understanding that the department will return to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means in the 2018 legislative session to report on continued progress by program on the comprehensive review of the agency's core operations, program priorities, delivery of services, and funding sources and cash flows.
All right, Senator Witt.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the subcommittee accept the report as presented.
Thank you. We can do an individual vote. Are there any objections to that?
And I guess for the record, that would also include LFO's recommendation as well.
Yes, thank you. All right, then we have it's been moved and accepted.
You have to have a carrier.
I've got to be the carrier. Okay. That'll be me. Thank you for reminding me. And we have accepted the report, and I'll be the carrier at the Ways and Means Committee for Ways and Means. All right, now we'll move into the public hearing, officially a public hearing. Do you need to say anything about the public hearing?
No.
Okay, good. Please.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. We'll talk a little bit about Dogami's mission and vision and goals, and then move into the other portions of the department. The mission of the department is to provide earth science and information and regulation to make Oregon safe and prosperous. With the vision with that is that people and places are prepared for natural resources, that decisions consider natural hazards. The people and places are prepared for natural hazards, and that we consider in our decisions those natural hazards, that resource potential is fully understood and responsibly developed, and that earth science contributes to the health of our environment, and that geologic learning and discovery abound. You can group the Dogami's focus into five areas: natural hazards assessment, earth science, geologic data and information, resource management, outreach and education, and governance and operations. As we've just talked about in the work session, we have a strong focus on governance and operations currently to remedy some of the challenges. This strategic framework is adopted by our five board members of the Dogami's governing board. And as part of the framework, we measure progress, and so Ian will present information on our key performance measures.
So the slide that you see here is a list of our current key performance measures and our proposed disposition of those in the current budget. And so you can see there's quite a few there where we're talking about removing them because they're completed, or removing them for other purposes, or replacing them. If you'd like, I can walk through the reason for each one of these right now, or if you want, we can walk through what we'd like to replace the KPMs with, and see then if you have any questions about individual ones that we've taken off the list or replaced. So I don't know whether you want to have it blow by blow.
Are there any particular approaches you'd like to take? Anyone? I think I'd like to know what it is you want to replace with.
From Great. So then the reason that we're going from these 11 KPMs to a new set of 7 is that over the years, first off, we've finished many of these tasks. And second off, the focus of the agency has changed as funding streams has changed. And so we found that this set of KPMs wasn't measuring a lot of what we were doing, and we wanted to have KPMs that actually tracked what we were spending the majority of our time and money on. And we also found that many of them were hard to measure and hard to influence. And so that's the reason several have been dropped. So if we'll move to the next slide. So what we're really doing is proposing 5 new KPMs here besides the mandatory 2 on governance and customer service, pardon me. So we've got 5 new that are topical for the agency, and we're trying to align those with our strategic framework. We're trying to make sure that we cover the vast majority of what we're working on, and we want them to be measurable and influenceable. So that's kind of the key behind this set. So if we go to the first one, the first KPM is to address natural hazards. And we had several that addressed them in bits and pieces in our last set. And this new KPM is basically supportive of a new initiative that we're trying to undertake. And the basic goal is to provide consistent, high accuracy, high resolution natural hazard information to all Oregon communities so that they have the same basis for planning throughout the state. We've made great progress in the last few years using our new LIDAR technology and data to develop very accurate ways of mapping things like landslides and earthquake hazards and floods. So we've got great tools that allow us to make definitive hazard information that is accurate to the level of a tax lot so that people can actually determine what their level of risk is. And what we want to do now is complete this work for all Oregon communities in a consistent manner so that everyone has the same planning basis. So that's the focus of this KPM. It encompasses earthquake, landslide, flood, coastal erosion where applicable, tsunami where applicable, and volcano hazards where applicable. So the complete suite of natural hazards in a complete package that includes not only a hazard assessment, but a risk assessment. And so the slide example that you're seeing here is risk assessment, where we have collected very detailed information about buildings, their cost, their location, their type. And when we intersect that with the hazard, then we can say, what is at risk in this community? How much, what's the dollar value of damage to a community if they have a 100-year flood? And that's the kind of information that can be a very powerful basis for planning, for mitigation for those hazards. So the metric on this one is going to be the percentage of UGBs in the state that have the complete suite of hazard products. And so that's relatively straightforward to calculate. We're starting off at about 17%, and we are our goal is to complete this over the course of three biennia. But that will be dependent on funding.
Thank you, Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Frederick. We had DLCD in here earlier. They're going through their budget and going over some of the work they're doing. And so I'm not sure if this is an appropriate question or not, but I'm just trying to understand, since you're doing something rather significant of changing your KPMs, I did want to hear at some point, doesn't have to be today, but why it is that this, who's going to do that other work and why, how it was decided that we weren't going to track those anymore. But this first slide here, and I'm not a scientist, but there seems to be a lot of the same things that are going on with DLCD. It's probably not the exact same because you're a Department of Geology, but they're in there doing planning. But I'm just wondering if there are a coordinated effort between your two agencies about, maybe you are unaware of the work that they were doing on this subject matter. But
okay. Co-chairs Witt and Frederick, members of the committee.
Senator, I'm probably missing something, I'm sure. So enlighten me, please.
No, that's a great question. And our purpose in doing this is to have the information that DLCD needs to use.
Okay, so you're the foundation for their work.
We work very closely. They fund studies. We plan the individual proposals for these projects because most of the money comes through FEMA. We sit down with them at the beginning of the year and we work out what their priorities are so that we're focusing the hazard studies in the areas that they're most interested in. Very, very close relationship there. And we totally understand. We'll tell you what the impacts are going to be. Their job is to go through and try to make some effort to mitigate it through planning.
Okay. Senator Girard.
Yeah, I just want to clarify, and I think that we addressed this, but the KPMs that you're removing, like the tsunami evacuation map, that's because you completed the map?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
They don't think there's going to be a tsunami.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
Moving on to the next slide, LIDAR data completion. This is an example of a KPM that we've included because over the last 7 years, almost 10 years, LIDAR has become a major portion of what our agency does. It accounts for, it's I think the second largest line item in our budget or in our expenditures, and we had no way to include it in our KPMs in the past. So we've added this as a very straightforward KPM. The goal is complete coverage of the state. We can measure from year to year how much progress we make. The only shortfall, I would say, of this KPM is that it's not as influenceable as we would like to be, because the way that we fund LIDAR is largely through building funding partnerships with other agencies. So we've had some contribution from the legislature over the years, but the vast majority of the funding has come from our 70-plus partner agencies and organizations that have contributed to the many projects here that have gone on in the state.
What at this point is your estimated completion? Do you know in terms of LIDAR? I mean, granted, you have to deal with all the other agencies to do that, but yeah. Do you have a date? Do you have a 2028 or 2030?
So the issue here is we're at 45% of the state, and you notice it's mostly the western half of the state, or if it's in the east side, it tends to be the more inhabited areas. We're down to the point where most of what's left is rangeland, BLM land, Forest Service land, and we're having a hard time finding partners to pay for those projects. We've covered virtually every community, so it's hard to get cities to kick in. The BLM actually paid for the majority of Western Oregon because they have forest interests in Western Oregon, but in the rangelands in Eastern Oregon, they have not yet decided that they need to put money into that program. You can see there's big holes in the South Coast there in the Forest Service. Again, we have not been very successful in getting funding from them to complete these kinds of projects. So the rate of completion is going to slow down substantially, I think, at this point, because we've gotten all of the areas that have high value targets, if you will, and we're kind of into the empty quarter in Eastern Oregon. Now, I've been saying this for several years, and I keep being surprised because money comes around, but I think it really is going to be slowing down quite a bit. You can see that the areas that we have planned there for this year, that's about half of what we did last year and maybe a third of what we did the year before. So,
thank you.
Okay, so the next KPM, this is one that we're basically, we've always had a KPM around completion of geologic mapping. We're sort of rebooting this one because we had some issues with how we were calculating it, an embarrassing meters versus feet issue. We're not supposed to do that as scientists, but it does happen. And so the goal here is to get complete detailed geologic map coverage of what we call the nominal inhabited area of the state. That's about 17% of the state's area where the vast majority of people live, vast majority of agriculture takes place, or irrigated or agriculture, industry, transportation. So we're really focused on the areas where there's a need for the full spectrum of benefits that come from geologic mapping. Geologic mapping is the foundation for natural hazard assessment, for resource assessments like groundwater studies and or mineral resource studies, and so it's an essential underpinning of everything we do. The metric is relatively straightforward. What percentage of that area have we completed? And we have fairly consistent funding both internally and from the U.S. Geological Survey to carry this mapping forward at a steady pace. Next one up is accessibility of information. And so there's several elements to this. One is legacy data. So everything that we produce now is digital. All of our publications are provided online on our website for people to download for free. We have numerous digital databases covering things like earthquake hazards or landslides that are available online as web maps or for people to download. And we also have a library that has been part of the agency since 1937 when it was first established, that has spent most of the last decade in 450 banker's boxes in the back of our office because we did not have funding for a librarian anymore, and without somebody to curate data, you can't really use it. So we've scanned all of that data, but what we want to do is get it indexed and put online. And really this is, you know, one of the most cost-effective ways to get new information is to take this old legacy paper information and make it available. So that's a very important portion of this. We also need to revamp our website. It's been the same for, 15 plus years. We can make it much more effective. So that's a big component of this. And then finally, keeping our databases current. So we have a database of all the best geologic mapping in the state. We have a database of all the known landslides in the state. We need to be refreshing those as new data comes along so that people are always getting the most current data. So those are the three components to the measurement on this particular KPM. So the next one is for the MLRR program. And in this case, what we're trying to do is, again, this gets back to that, what is the appropriate level of field presence? We want to get out and visit every active mine site at least once a year so that we can make sure that there's not something going on there that is perhaps going to lead to a problem, an offsite discharge of turbid water or something like that. We're going to be making a great deal of use of imagery that's available now, like Google Earth imagery, to allow us to identify sites that don't have anything going on, so there's no point in sending somebody out there to look at them, and we're trying to try to use that technology to be really effective at how we use that field time, because every hour that somebody spent driving out to a site to look at it is an hour that they're not spent spending writing up reports or working on permitting or doing something else. We want to be very efficient with that field work. And then the customer service, again, this is a standard KPM, but in the past, we've normally collected our data when we give a presentation or we go hold a workshop or something like that. We're going to be much more proactive about polling our clients, people that we're doing grant and contract work for, and our permittees to try to get more consistent and better feedback from them. And then the last KPM is the governance KPM, again, a relatively standard one, looking at various aspects of good management of the agency on the part of our governing board. And I believe that is the last one. So happy to answer any questions about the KPMs.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Lucas.
Mr. Chair, can you go back to the slide on the existing key performance measures? The KPM number 12 that you're proposing to remove, what does that involve, and if it's important, who's picking that up?
Co-Chair Frederick and members of the committee, Representative Lewis, the KPM 12 was an extremely complicated formula that looked at community preparedness for hazards. There's a great big spreadsheet that actually no one in the agency, no one is left in the agency who knows how it was developed. That includes things like, does a community have a FEMA-approved natural hazard plan that's available online? You get X amount of points for that. And although the goal of trying to ensure that all communities are adequately prepared for hazards is a very important one, most of the elements of that KPM were things that we couldn't influence. So, we could take credit for the fact that a county had completed their natural hazard mitigation plan, but we couldn't encourage them or compel them to get that done. And so that was it was partly the complexity and partly the fact that we simply couldn't affect changes in that KPM.
Follow up, Mr.
Go ahead,
Chair.
Please.
So is anything being lost by taking that off?
We've captured all of the elements that we can influence of hazard assessment and risk assessment in our new KPM risk assessment based KPM number one. The elements of community preparedness are not being captured, but again, that's DLCD's job or OEM's job, and it's not actually our responsibility to make sure that communities have proper planning and emergency management and that sort of thing in place.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, a similar question to yours with respect to the proposed KPM 1 earthquake and landslide map completion. At our current rate of completion, how long will it take to finish up?
Co-Chairs Witt and Frederick, members of the committee, Representative Helm, the money for this project currently comes from FEMA. And we've gotten to this point where we're 17-18% done after about 2 years of that FEMA funding. If all we have to work with is FEMA funding going forward and it stays at the same rate, then we are probably looking at 10 years to completion. However, we are always looking for other sources of funding that would augment this. So for example, in the Portland metropolitan area, we have funding from the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization to do a big chunk of the earthquake hazard assessment for the three metropolitan counties. So that is giving us a big boost. But we have to go out and scrounge for those kinds of money.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just a comment there. I asked the question because I already had a hint of the answer, because we followed this in 2015 when we tried to do to get some planning dollars to DLCD to do natural hazards planning. And, you know, we do a lot of talking in this building about resiliency planning, et cetera. This is the bedrock of it for the coast. And if we can't fund this, I don't know why we're bothering with other things, because we could be attempting to move critical infrastructure, move critical buildings. And if we don't know that we're moving those to a safe place, then we're wasting millions and maybe billions of dollars on an unfruitful process.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Girard.
Thank you. I'd like to comment what Rep. Helm talked about, because the data that I got from ODOT, we have a 40% chance of having an 8 or better on the southern coast. We have a 10% chance of maybe up to a 9 or a 9 or better in Astoria. But the ODOT seismic plan plan for the earthquake seems to center more around the northern part. It just seems backwards to me. But I do have a rather simple question. It's not a simple question. It's a question that I've never seen a map for, and that is, how deep a water do you have to be in before you're probably safe from the tsunami, which is beneficial to the coast because a lot of people are on fleets and they think that if they get to deep water, they're going to be safe, but no one knows how deep a water and how big a tsunami that would take. Does that make sense to you?
Co-chairs Witt and Frederick, Senator Girard, we have an answer for that question. We have been producing a series of maritime guidance brochures for various ports up and down the coast through the National Tsunami Hazard Mitigation Program, and those brochures show areas around the entrance to ports that will have unusual turbulence as a result of the tsunami, and they show the depth to which you need, or the distance you need to go offshore to be in water deep enough to be safe.
What depth are we looking at? Do you remember by chance?
It depends on where you are.
Okay.
But I'd be happy to get some of those brochures and send them to you.
I would like to see that. Thank you.
Anything else? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested in where Dogami is presently and maybe in the future with respect to our inventory of mineral resources. And I don't know, I saw one slide that referenced minerals mapping with respect to LIDAR. I don't know if this is the best time to ask the questions that I have, or whether your presentation may go on and have something specific to minerals inventory.
The presentation doesn't get into the minerals inventory portion. There was a study done in last fall.
Yes.
That Ian can speak to. You want to go ahead?
Certainly. So as a result of HB 3089 that was passed in 2015, we did complete a high-level mineral resource potential study of the state last year that we presented in September to this body. And it outlined, as requested, tasks that we could undertake to further study mineral resources in southern and eastern Oregon and try to stimulate economic development out there. Within our current budget, we don't have funding specifically targeted at mineral resource assessments. All of our geologic mapping projects are produce data that is essential for mineral resource subjects, but we are not choosing the locations based on that particular purpose. So if we're doing geologic mapping in the Wasco County area, we have very little hope of finding gold out there, but we do have good hope of understanding the groundwater system to deal with those issues. So the very fact that our geologic mapping is targeted at that inhabited area kind of tilts it away from the places where we might be working for the purpose of mineral resource assessment. We've had very little success finding external funding sources for projects related to mineral resource assessment.
Go ahead, yes.
Thank you. So I'm going to attempt probably inarticulately to try and determine where we're at. So you did the study last fall, and that's probably is that suggestive of the likelihood of minerals being in existence in certain areas of our state, but we haven't what I call ground truthed it. We haven't gone out and assessed on the ground where individual minerals may actually be located and the extent to which they're located there.
So the report identified areas with mineral resource potential based largely on the fact that those minerals were mined historically in those areas.
Yes.
There hasn't been any new relevant data generated over large areas of Oregon in several decades of the kind of information that would encourage mining companies to come and do additional exploration. So all the information that we use for that report, the mining companies have had for a long time. If they're not here looking, it's because none of the available data makes it look attractive enough for them to come and spend exploration dollars. And so one of the best strategies to get exploration going again is to introduce new data into the environment. And so that's what we were trying to do with the recommendations in the HB 3089 report is find cost-effective ways to put a little bit more data into the system in the hopes of getting new exploration in the state.
And Mr. Chairman,
yes, go ahead.
I fully recognize that you can only do what you have the resources to be able to do, but it would appear to me, I think, if there are mineral resources available, that we as a state should know that, should have a accurate inventory. I think we have, with some degree, a pretty good idea of how much timber we have in the state of Oregon, how much what port capacities we have around the state, and on and on and on. And I'm mystified. I can't believe in the year 2017 that we, as a state, don't know what our inventory of mineral resources actually is in this state.
I agree wholeheartedly, but the question is how do we get that?
Yes,
you know the fact that we haven't done the LIDAR for what's essentially called rangeland, but that rangeland can have all sorts of mineral deposits as well in it, and we really haven't taken a look at, you know, what's going on in Harney County and Malheur County, and I'm sure that there are some things there.
Yes.
Even if it's diatomaceous earth, we should at least have some sense of what's going on.
And,
yes.
And is it LIDAR then? Is that the first step in making this?
Oh, that would help as much, but
so it's very, very helpful to have LIDAR as a basis for doing this kind of study. Having an accurate map is really important. Much of the mapping, much of the geologic mapping, which is sort of the key, this is what an exploration geologist starts with, is a
sure.
geologic map, because it tells him where he ought to go, you know, where there's a permissive environment. In southeastern Oregon, a lot of that mapping was done in the 1950s at a very, very low resolution scale, and we have no idea what's actually potentially out there until we get in and do the kind of mapping we do these days is at 1 to 24,000 scale or 1 to 8,000. Those maps are at 1 to 250,000. So we're doing more than 10 times the detail and resolution when we go out and do it. And that's what you really need to do in order to, you know, to identify potential areas for future development. The thing to keep in mind, though, is that it's really expensive to find and prove up mineral deposits. And so the state is probably never going to be able to put as much money into it as the private sector will. So we have to just be smart about how we spend our money to encourage the private sector to come in and work on the problem. And I'll give you a little example. Is in the last 6 months, someone has staked about 20,000 acres out in Malheur County in one block, presumably because they think there's some sort of ore deposit there. They spent probably $250,000 just staking claims. Mm-hmm. We haven't had $250,000 to spend on a mineral resource study in decades. So there's a huge amount of leverage potential there, I guess, for the state if it spends its money carefully.
I just a final commentary, and then I'll
go ahead.
I'll relinquish. It has to be terribly frustrating for you all in the geology department of the state of Oregon to not even know what our inventory is. I can't help but think that you are terribly frustrated by that. And I hope, Mr. Chairman, that someday maybe we can leverage some resources for these folks to be able to what I think is just fundamental to their mission.
If nothing else, I hope we can begin the process, because we have inventories of natural resources,
yes,
that are both biological resources that we,
yes,
don't really know about,
yes,
as well as geological resources,
yes,
and frankly, for a number of other things, I think we need to have a sense of the kind of research that's going on around the state on a variety of things,
yes,
materials and other things. We have not done that survey. It needs to begin in some form, whether it's just the first steps or not, but I think that's something we need to do, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Yes, I have one more technical question. This is looking out for my own derriere. I have property over on the coast, and we're told that we have 20 minutes. Now, I just wonder, is that 20 minutes from when the shake starts, or 20 minutes from after the shake ends?
From the beginning of the earthquake.
Well, the earthquake, in my understanding, is the shake can last almost 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
On a big one. Five.
But you're correct. And so, yes, the answer is actually you only have 10 or 15 minutes to evacuate, because you're,
okay,
not going anywhere during the first five.
Okay. Thanks.
So, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I couldn't help but chuckle yesterday. I had a news article on mapping out in the Puget Sound little earthquakes. They said, you know, we can give warning up to 30 seconds. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, that's your that's a worthwhile project.
Well, you'll have to get the transporter system going at some,
yes,
point. And then you
can
afterwards get beamed out of there. But at this point, I don't think we have. It's going to be difficult. My son was in the Fukushima, was in Kobe, Japan, during the Fukushima quake, and they shook for 8 to 10 minutes, and he was actually in Kobe, which is 400 miles from this epicenter. So that quake was basically where Sacramento is, and that's where it shook for that long. But of course, they also moved the whole island about 10 to 15 feet. So, well, that's the kind of strength that we're talking about. Well, any other questions? Are you going to continue here, I guess?
We're going to shift focus back to the internal governance, building the agency's foundation to produce the science and stewardship. We've got a framework that we're using to both build capacity in order to deliver on the science, and the top row, which speaks to governance and operations, education resource management. Those are the those are supported by the POPs to the right, which Kim will be getting into shortly, and those are so that the agency as a whole has that stability that we can deliver the science to the communities, which then are supported by the POPs on the second row to the right as well. And as we've discussed, it is about strengthening the agency's foundation in both the geological survey and services program and in the mineral lands and regulation and reclamation program. And without really strengthening that foundation, we don't get to the core mission of the two programs. So with that, Kim's going to dive into the policy option packages and describe what they hope to accomplish.
All right, so for the record, my name is Kimberly Riddell, the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. We're going to talk about building capacity in our policy packages, and you keep hearing about us strengthening our foundation, and that's really what our policy option packages do. This package 103 is, I think I've met with all of you, but for Representative Lewis, this will be new, so bear with me as you hear a little bit of a repeat. Package 103 is taking four incorrectly classified ISS positions, which are information system specialists, and really move them into the correct category of work they're doing of natural resource specialists. It also adds the management and supervisory classification to the chief scientist, our deputy director, so that he has that supervisory and manager to do what he is doing across the agency. This is a cost-effective way. These roles are not new. They're just reclassifying them where they're supposed to be. And our new management structure, including the highlighted in orange here, our program manager, and the natural resource supervisor and the earth seismic supervisor and two leads in the MLRR program. None of these are new positions. They're just new roles that these people are taking on in a rotational capacity. And it extends the opportunities for gaining supervisory experience to multiple staff, which strengthens the agency's leadership foundation. Obviously, the deputy director reclassification has the existing knowledge of the agency to both programs and retains the management oversight and engagement with the MLRR program. All right. This is our policy option package 102 and 080. Our package 102, our hazard IT remediation, including LIDAR. The agency's mission is information-centric. We deal with a lot of data. And this 102 includes an ISS position coming into the agency as permanent. Right now, we receive that as a limited duration position in the May e-board when we went there and asked for our May IT package, which is a continuation of the policy package 080. That May 2016 e-board funding includes the ISS5 position, who is working directly with each of the staff people in the GSNS program and is essential to their day-to-day needs as they work with their data. And then that ISS-8 position is in that package 102 as a permanent, and that's to continue that, strengthen the entire organization to come into compliance with the state requirements and to continue where we're supposed to be. It also, that package 102 includes revising our website so that it's also in compliance with state requirements, and as Ian very eloquently said, gets us where we need to be and changes what hasn't been changed in over 10 years. So So the cost of this package 102 in our governor's budget is other funds, $352,477. Our package 080 is general fund, $1,209,618. That is for that website, the ISS5, the IT information we need to get up to date. Before I go on, that package 103, I forgot to tell you the funding. I want to make sure you're aware of that as we go through. That was that one. The general fund is $14,115. Other fund is $2,249. And federal fund is $9,289. So the Geological Survey and Services Program, happily known to us as the GSNS program, develops the maps and the reports that you've heard about and the data to help Oregon manage the natural resources and prepare for natural hazards around the state. That information helps Oregon communities, governments, businesses, and public understand the state's natural hazards and resources and provides them with the data that can help take action to increase resilience and prosperity. Continuing partnerships. Both of our programs, the MLRR program and the GSNS, work collaboratively with multiple partners to increase the effectiveness that we are doing throughout the state and expand the reach of the services that we provide. For example, we are working with the Oregon's universities and the students' employment for hands-on practical experience in the field and in the office.
This is revenues.
Do research collaborations with PSU, OSU, and U of O for 18 projects, proposals, and agreements in the past 5 years. For GSNS, partners are also often our funders. For MLRR, the connection and leaderships with operators help improve the services that we provide to them. And these strengthen our foundation and help us not only continue these collaborations, but strengthen them and hopefully make them even more effective and provide the services to these groups and to all Oregonians. So this is our package 101. This is actually five of our LD positions, and it turns those into permanent positions within the agency. One of these people have been here in an LD position for 6 years, another one for 4 years. The people who work in this agency are incredibly dedicated, and I think that this isn't costing us extra money this year, but it gives them a real sense that what they're doing is important, and it's just a good thing. So the general fund for this is $138,228, and the other fund is $797,209. And package 107, the one at the bottom, y'all know that this is the fun one for me. package 107 is not an actual increase in our funding. This is called non-limited other funds, and it's just a limitation of revenues that we can bring in and then send back out. And this is for seismic motion instrument funds, and this is where the construction that happens around the state either puts in these seismic monitors in their new construction, or they are required to give that equivalent funds to Dagami if they aren't going to put it in the building. And so we take that in. This gives us the opportunity to take in up to $500,000, and then we automatically send that back out through the university system, who go out throughout the state and put those instruments in needed places in the state.
About how many instruments are out there right now? How many do you anticipate new ones going in? Do you know?
I'll send you accurate information.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right. And again, this is a $500,000 non-limited other fund. So you can see our revenue for 2019 is a bit higher than it was in 2017. Some of this is due to that fee increase that we're now realizing in the MLRR program. We have 1 year of data, and we'll hopefully be able to get a lot more data and better and more effectively use that.
Yes, Senator Girard.
I should have let you finish, but I'm looking at the key over on the left, and I'm trying to figure out what the other funds are as a source of revenue.
Which ones? There's non-limited other funds?
You got blue and you got a dark blue, either one of them. I'd like to know what both of them are.
All right. So the non-limited other funds, that lighter blue, and it's a really short stack at the end. Mm-hmm. That is that $500,000 limitation for the strong motion instrument funding. And then that other funds includes MLRR and GS&S together. It's with the full agency.
So it's federal money.
No. These are other funds. The federal fund is that light green bar.
But LIDAR, who do you get most of your LIDAR expenditures revenue from?
We get a lot of our LIDAR funding from federal funds. Actually, most of it is federal funding. So that $8 million in other funds is the MLRR's portion. It's also LIDAR funding, some of it. And then the GS&S mapping work that we get around the state. And indirect.
So the LIDAR funding is indirect? Is it coming through the other agencies, through BLM and the like? Is that what you're talking about?
That is federal funds. If That's it comes through BLM, it's federal
right.
funding.
But you said there was federal funds and the other funding, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. If I said that, I misspoke.
Okay.
Federal funds is only the light green bar, that $5.8 million. And a lot of that is LIDAR. But that other fund, the taller blue bar, has no federal funding in that.
Okay.
That is only other funds.
So that's from other state agencies? Sorry.
No, that's appropriate. So where is that coming from?
Co-Chair Frederick and Way, Senator Girard. Yes, it is coming from other state agencies, but those come in as other funds. Some of it, if they got a federal grant themselves, it comes in as federal as other funds. There's a special category for it, but it is considered other fund monies to our agency. When it comes from a federal grantee directly to DAGAMI, that is considered federal funding. Does that answer that?
No, it's confusing because the blue column is so much higher than everything else that it looks like it's a major source of your funding. So I would probably like even more clarity someday. You can just send me a little memo as to where the breakdown of that money.
I can definitely do that. We have the accounting structure that will give you all that detail.
If you would do that with explaining the acronyms as well, that would be helpful.
Yes.
Thank you.
So this is the GS&S expenditure per biennia. And these expenditures include, you can see that there's a little bit of an increase in the 2019 portion, and that includes the package 080 at 90%, the package 101, the package 102 at 90%, package 103, and package 107.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Okay. I'm confused because you still have the funding ledger on the left. So you... That tells you to me where you got the revenue from, but I'm trying to figure out how that's an expenditure for this
Kraft.
Because
you got general fund, so you...
I don't think I'm understanding the question.
Okay.
So I would love to talk more with you.
It says on the lower left corner, and the bar graph that you have up there, you have general fund. Okay. Now, to me, the general fund is where you get your revenue from, not where you're spending money. This is, it says expenditure. Am I missing something?
Okay, she's just saying that's where Renee spent. So 2019, it says $5 million over there on the far right for the general fund. That's where the money came out of. It doesn't, there isn't a detail. Is there another slide that's going to come up and say what you actually spent the money on?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So why are the two slides different then?
Because they got the money that came into it, but it's not where she's just showing where the money, the accounts it went into, and the account from where it goes out, and it's not as it's not your parking lot, because they're not going to have an additional slide, I guess, seeing the breakdown of where the expenditures occurred, unless they're going to say that later.
It's also a little bit different. I don't know if this will help Senator Girard, but this is the full agency revenue. So it includes MLRR, which is 100% other fund fee-based. This is the expenditure only for the GS&S side. So they do not receive as much other funds as MLRR does.
All their expenditures would roll up and meet with that total sum. If it's reconciled.
And here's the MLR.
I've been there before.
And here's the MLRR expenditure. And this is where you see it's 100% other funds fee-based. And that is where half of our other funds are actually coming in and going out. And there is an increase of expenditures in the 2019 portion because they are carrying 10% of package 090 and 10% of package 102. Right. I also want to take this opportunity to tell you that our total expenditures for the agencies, 15-17, 52.38% of that was on personal services. In 17-19, 51.5% of that is budgeted at personal services. So it's going down, and our second most expensive line item, as Ian was saying, is lighter, but it's professional services as a category, and that came in 15-17 at 31.99%, and then 17-19, it's budgeted currently at 24.7%.
Go right ahead. I think we only have a little bit of time, so please, if you can.
Sure. We only have a few slides left to wrap up, and just wanted to touch on the challenges that we've already covered to some degree. The agency is absolutely dedicated to improving our business practices. We've been in that process for over a year now, and as well improving our were outdated IT practices. In both programs, more work is needed to assess and improve service delivery, as well as assess our overall funding model. We will continue to implement the actions identified in the business practice review until all of those bars at the beginning are 100%. Behind the curve on assessing the business model, but we'll as we get some of the higher bars, higher priority bars achieved, then we'll be able to devote more time to the business model assessment. We'll continue to work the IT remediation plan, as well as develop that leadership capacity within the agency so that as people transition out of the agency, we've got a depth of staff that can fill those roles from a basis of experience and internal training and supervision and management. And then, as Ian has mentioned earlier, very clear need to continue the focus on MLR operations, efficiency and effectiveness. And that's just going to take some time. We're finding as we dig deeper, there's more information that we weren't aware of that we're then able to include in our comprehensive assessment as to what would be the best path forward. And we are making progress in MLRR as well. It's just a longer period that it didn't have the attention that it's getting now. So with that, if there are any
Are there any questions? We will be having public testimony. Do you have more to tell us on Monday? Or are we?
We're finished with our presentation, okay. But just the presentation from that.
So on Monday, what would you do, Kathy?
Do you mind if we wait until Monday for your situation? I think it'll be a perfect lead up to the public testimony, so that'd be very helpful. Well, having said that, I think we will thank you very much for being here, and we'll close the committee meeting and close the public hearing on 5011 and HB 5011, and close the committee hearing on the Natural Resources Committee, subcommittee. Thank you. See you Monday. Subcommittee. Thank you. See you Monday.